Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Trina Roach.
Hello, Jesse.
Mi'kmaq video journalist from APTN. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Trina, today we're going to talk about an illegal, violent protest by Indigenous lobster fishermen. Wait. Sorry, I got a typo in there. That should read, an illegal, violent protest of Indigenous lobster fishermen.
Yeah.
We are also going to talk about the CBC leveraging its credibility to create branded advertorial podcast for its corporate clients. There they go again, stealing all my ideas. Once again, glad to have you here.
Thanks, Jesse.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you in part by Catherine Christofferson, Elise Cote, Lyndon Sayers, Daniel Smith, Audrey Hurd, Mark Wall, and Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an animator in Ottawa, our nation's capital. I support Canada Land because as independent journalists, they have more leeway to speak truth to power, something often said to be valued at larger news organizations. But I find that Jesse's journalists walk the walk more than they talk the talk. It's my favorite way to get the pulse of not just Canadian news, but also the news behind the news. Also, Ryan McMahon's work on Thunder Bay was excellent, and I look forward to similar stories in the near future. Black Lives Matter, Trans Lives Matter.
About 200 Indigenous people and their supporters are at a wharf today in support of a First Nations plan to launch a lobster fishery based on its own management plan. The opening is in defiance of federal regulations that say the fishery is closed for the season.
It's tense here at the Saunierville Wharf, where yesterday The seven boats behind me set out with Mi'kmaq fishermen on board to lay lobster traps in what the Sebaganagani First Nation is describing as a rights-based livelihood fishery.
They say a Supreme Court ruling grants them the right to catch and sell lobster outside of the regular fishing season. But the decision doesn't come without controversy.
That's some news reporting on this conflict where you are in Nova Scotia, or close to where you are. And Trina, here's a CBC headline that's since been changed. Fishermen dump illegal lobster traps outside DFO, Department of Fishery office in Nova Scotia. Trina, what's wrong with that headline? Why did it have to be changed?
Well, I mean, the Mi'kmaq lobster traps are not illegal. The lobster traps that are set by the Mi'kmaq that have been pulled by non-Mi'kmaq fishermen and dumped in front of DFO, they're not illegal traps. The fishery that the Mi'kmaq are engaging in right now is a rights-based fishery, and it's not illegal. So it was just factually wrong. And inferring that the Mi'kmaq are doing something wrong, and that's really been a narrative that's actually been kind of perpetuated by some of the coverage, and sort of taking, you know, the statements from non-Mi'kmaq fishermen, typically Acadian in that part of the province, who are commercial fishermen, and making a lot of statements about the Mi'kmaq and what they're doing and that it's dangerous for the stocks and that it's wrong, and not enough questioning of those statements from the media. And we're kind of starting to see that change a little bit in some of the coverage, but generally the narrative has made it seem like the Mi'kmaq are doing something wrong. Even from DFO to a certain extent, we've kind of heard that as sort of the message. It's simply not the case.
But there is a sense that there's an audience for a corrective of that coverage and the way that things are being framed. And, you know, Jeff Douglas, former host of As It Happens, who's gone to back home out east, is hosting local CBC radio in Nova Scotia, had you on and gave you, you know, space to criticize the CBC's coverage. They did change that headline. Maybe they're having a rethink at your instigation and suggestion of others. Is that too generous, or is that happening?
Well, no, I think I am seeing examples of it. Even with CBC, because initially, yeah, like I spoke to Jeff like last week, and I had been seeing the coverage, and I was like, oh my God, like, because, you know, the sort of like, they're saying it's an illegal fishery, the Mi'kmaq say it's a treaty right, and like, you don't have to attribute that, right? Like, it's fact. We only attribute in media opinions or emotions, right? Like, we can just say the Mi'kmaq have a treaty right, a constitutional treaty right.
Yeah, the Mi'kmaq have a treaty right, and these people feel bad about it.
And I think I said, like, some of the headlines should be, like, because it's, like, tensions escalating. Even that, and I think APTN even had a, because you're in media, and it's, like, you just need quick headlines, but you really need to start to think about your words.
Well, those tensions, they do escalate.
But it's not, that sort of makes it seem like both sides, And it's like, well, how about, let's just say, angry non-Mi'kmaq fishermen upset that Mi'kmaq have a constitutional treaty right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too long, but...
and are engaged in, like, radically illegal, thuggish practices.
Yeah. Then some of the coverage, I was still reading it, and I'm like, oh my God, right? Like, come on. Like, you can't say stuff like the court gives the Mi'kmaq the right. The court didn't give the Mi'kmaq the right.
Right.
They recognized the right. They upheld the right, right? That's a completely different nuance, right? What the commercial fishermen or fish harvesters have is a privilege to fish. The Mi'kmaq have a right. And there is a fundamental understanding you have to have. Media has a lot of work to do to really understand that the Mi'kmaq are not an interest group. They're not just another group in a multicultural society. They are the First Peoples. They are a sovereign nation with jurisdiction. And if you don't get that, then you sort of end up with that he said, she said, minimizing the Mi'kmaq authority in the situation.
To be fair to the CBC, that headline, which they changed, had the word illegal in quotation marks, which I think is still like, either it's legal or it's illegal. And this has been reported as the fishermen say that what the Mi'kmaq are doing is illegal. That's their side of this. But we actually have clarity on this. There is this legal decision from, you know, 20 years ago. The Marshall decision, it states that the Mi'kmaq have a right to earn a moderate living. Is that accurate?
Well, let's start with Donald Marshall. So Donald Marshall Jr. goes fishing. He asserts his treaty right, because the treaties of 1760 to 61 protect the Mi'kmaq right to sell, barter, and trade natural resources. And so he's asserting his right and catches and sells eels without a license, out of season. He's charged by DFO. He goes through the court system all the way to the Supreme Court, and he wins that case. And it's a major victory for the Mi'kmaq. The problem is that right now, if Donald Marshall today went and fished again and did the exact same thing, if he was alive today, he could still be charged by DFO. So Canada really hasn't implemented the Marshall decision. And the moderate livelihood part was really created by the court as a way to sort of constrain the right. So you can make money. So the treaties did say this, you know, sell, barter, trade. But the court felt like, well, we can't have anybody getting rich. Right? You know, you don't want to see them do too well. So it was like this way to constrain the right. So they just sort of added this term. Like, it was not a Mi'kmaq term. It wasn't a DFO term. The courts created this term, moderate livelihood, didn't define it. And so the last 25 or 21 years have really been, you know, it's been this question, well, what does that mean? What does that look like? What is a moderate livelihood?
I mean, that part is fascinating to me. Like, you don't see that anywhere else where the law says capitalism can occur, but not too much. I mean, maybe that should be something that we see in regulations in different industries. Like, you can do this, but don't do it too much. I've never seen that before. Like, you can make a living in moderation. Like, it's like we're going to set some kind of ambiguous limit. I mean, and I know what they're going for. What they're going for is that lobster fishing in Nova Scotia is a widespread industrialized commercial enterprise. And it seems to me that the intent of that is to say the Mi'kmaq can do this in some kind of like ancient traditionalist way, but we don't want them horning in on our thing. So after 21 years of this ambiguity of like, well, how, what does that mean and how do we do it? They've just said, fuck it, we're setting up. And it almost seems like a joke, like it's a moderate livelihood fishery. That's what they're calling it. And they've been issuing licenses. And that's where we get this news story. They're just exerting their constitutional right to make a moderate living. And then the local lobster fishermen, and this is where we get into what actually is illegal in a protest and why a lot of people are seeing this pop up on their Facebook and Twitter feeds. They have been harassing and hounding these Mi'kmaq fishermen.
We got this boat here trying to sneak up on us. No, they're shooting flares at us. Oh, shit, they just missed us.
There's like a convoy of trucks that are like harassing people who bought lobsters from the Mi'kmaq fishermen. And there are these yelling matches between the different rival fishermen. And at one point, you can actually hear a cop saying to the settler fishermen,
whether we like it or not, they're allowed to go out and fish.
Whether we like it or not, they're allowed to go out and fish, which, you know, God bless that cop for just being honest, us and them.
I mean, he did recognize the right. He recognized that that's a Mi'kmaq, but you're right. It was very much an us and them sort of context. And that is, I think you'll see that in a lot of conflict as you go across the country. That's not just here. Anyways.
So this has exploded into a national news story. I mean, before we talk about the coverage again, just like, where is it at now? Because I'm just following this mostly through social media, and I'm hearing that the RCMP have finally stepped up to protect the Mi'kmaq fishermen. Is that your understanding?
Well, I'm not on site today. Like, we had Hurricane Teddy coming up, and actually, we have a reporter on the ground there covering it, Angel Moore. I went down to assist over the weekend, so I was there on site at a couple of different days. Like, over the weekend, the Sebaganagadi First Nation, like, they kick off their moderate livelihood fishery on Thursday with ceremony, and it's very celebratory. It's a very proud moment. Mm-hmm. Then we see by Thursday afternoon that the non-Mi'kmaq are out there harassing, cutting traps, being very aggressive on the water, very aggressive on land as well. By Friday night, the Mi'kmaq blocked off the wharf in Sonierville, and so the road down. They just wanted to keep the peace and keep the protesters sort of separate. When you were inside the checkpoint, it was a great mood. I mean, they were kind of selective about who they're letting in. And so those kind of confrontations were minimized. And so, you know, there's people, there's drumming, there's lots of food, you know, there's a feeling of pride. Hundreds of Mi'kmaq from around Mi'kmaq came down over the weekend to show support. Some of the Mi'kmaq lobster fishermen went out and retrieved some of the traps that had been cut. There's this process of like dragging to bring up the traps. They didn't find them all, but they found some of them. But always in the distance out on the water are all like just dozens of commercial fishing boats. And then at times they come in. And at times, you know, you saw the video with the shooting the flares, coming in and sort of circling and surrounding and pulling up the traps. Now, Hurricane Teddy, I think, kind of caused a little bit of a lull in everything, clearly with, you know, storm surge and all of that stuff. And that's still sort of happening. So I have a feeling it's probably pretty quiet. But now, once the storm passes, we'll see what's going to happen. Because the Sebaganagadi First Nation, like, they're not going anywhere. They're going to keep their fishery going. Their plan was until the commercial season started, mm-hmm. and then they were going to get out of the way. So this kind of like it's a partly celebratory, partly confrontational, kind of depending on where you are and who you're with.
It's probably worth noting, I'm hearing now from our producer, Tiffany, that the state of emergency is now extended to next Tuesday. That's confirmed with the chiefs. So I think that the Mi'kmaq must be feeling somewhat anxious still. You know, trying to understand this from a far remove, it's easy, I think, to really see this as like an expression of some of the most virulent and ugly racism in recent memory between like actually just like cutting the lobster traps and dumping them in front of the Department of Fishery office. Like, you know, you're not going to earn your moderate living. We're going to steal your traps. But then moving on to like, you know, this intimidation of a fleet of boats chasing a smaller boat and shooting flares at it. Like, I have to imagine that if that flare connected with the boat, people could die, harassing the customers. And then you look online and I'm just seeing like, and I don't mind using their names. I mean, they put this racism to their own names. Charles Chamberlain writing, you know, my grandmother used to take in little native children and place their hands in boiling water to prevent them from stealing. Demon spawns. Jamie, I'm not going to read all this stuff. It's disgusting. Jamie Estabrooks, I will read their names. Gloria Innes Dernford, Jordan Barnes, giving voice to a racism that seems like it goes back, like they reference their parents and grandparents, and they get to like death threats and genocide threats. So I think it's easy to just see this as the most disgusting thing that we could imagine. I don't want to reduce things. I know that there are other voices amongst the commercial settler fisheries where they're saying, look, what we're actually saying here is that there are rules around lobster fishing that have to do with seasonality. And if you fish the lobsters in the off season, they can't mate. We can't replenish the stocks. And we just want them to follow the same rules that we follow. I wonder if you could speak to that kind of more moderate position against the Mi'kmaq fishery.
I read a quote and it said, we're not being racist.
We have been ignored, obfuscated, called racists, liars, fomenters of hate now for years. That is not what this is about. This is not about race. This is not about treaty rights. It's about greed and corruption and no respect for a nursery ground.
And I'm like, okay, but you're not racist. He's with the with one of the fishermen's associations down there. And so there this concern about conservation playing up, like they're going to ruin the lobster stocks. I've said this before. They're going to ruin the lobster stocks was a battle cry in Burnt Church from the non-Indigenous or non-Mi'kmaq fishermen there. 21 years later, it has not been borne out, right? And so when you hear that now, And the thing is, when you're media covering this, you're like, oh, yeah, well, we want to, you know, that seems like a good point. Except the science doesn't support it. The lobster stocks, DFO's own science says that the lobster stocks are very healthy.
Uh-huh.
And what that narrative does when they're saying, well, this is about conservation, this is about the health of the lobsters, this isn't the time to fish. Well, DFO already allows the Mi'kmaq to fish this time of year down there for food, social, and ceremonial. So, like, it's just not a commercial season. The commercial season, though, like, so where St. Mary's Bay is, you know, it's very near the Bay of Fundy. If you were to, you know, sort of sail out from St. Mary's Bay, you'll kind of run into the Gulf of Maine. In Maine, they fish year-round. They don't have seasons. Seasons are designed not for conservation so much as so we don't flood the market. It's more of a market tactic.
Yeah.
And so when we're not, like, as media, when we're not sort of questioning that, when we're allowing that kind of comment to stand without questioning it, we're not really doing our jobs. But when we hear this debate, because conservation is one of the sort of things that, like, you, if you pin it on conservation, then it's kind of like, oh yeah, maybe they're doing something wrong. Maybe they're hurting the lobster stocks. But they're not. In the commercial season, there's between 360 and 390,000 traps in the commercial fishery. And the Mi'kmaq at this point, they have 7 licenses. They're only fishing 3. Each boat has 50 traps. So there's 150 traps right now, right? Like, so
that's kind of all you need to say, isn't it? Like by order of magnitude, the discrepancy here between the commercial fishery and this Mi'kmaq, you know, reasonable living fishery just seems like that just destroys the argument, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As I understand it, there's a glut of lobster on the market because the ability to sell it to China is hampered right now. And this might just be like a market control thing, trying to basically price fix.
Yeah. Well, it's all about the markets too, right? Because when I did a doc, a Living Treaties, last year on this, for the marking the 20th anniversary of the Marshall Decision, I did an interview with DFO, a couple of interviews, and they always DFO, because the reason when we're talking about an illegal fishery too, let's just say if it is illegal, and it's not, but it's only illegal, say, in the eyes of DFO or those commercial fishermen, because there are no regulations that reflect the Marshall Decision in place, that reflect the treaty right, constitutional treaty right to a moderate livelihood fishery. The Mi'kmaq have a right, they're just that the government hasn't caught up and actually like legislated, you know, put the legislation in place to reflect that. DFO will say that it is addressing moderate livelihood in its negotiations that are ongoing, and that some bands have signed what they're calling these rights reconciliation agreements that recognize the right to a moderate livelihood. They don't. They're just commercial fishing agreements. They're money and gear and traps. When you sign those agreements, which is why most bands haven't, only 3 have. When you sign those agreements, you have to actually agree that you're not going to sue DFO and that you're not going to assert your treaty rights. So you're actually going to quiet your rights. That's how DFO has been sort of handling, trying to address moderate livelihood. They're not addressing it. But when I talked to Jim Jones, who's kind of, you know, the guy negotiating these agreements, he made that point. It's like, this is very much about the market. I mean, the Atlantic fisheries, and not just lobster, but the fisheries in the Atlantic region, it's like a $3 billion a year industry, right? Mm-hmm. And 3/4 of that goes to international markets. So for them, market stability is really important, right? Instability, Jim Jones, I remember the quote, he said, it's bad for business and that's true for fishing. So basically what the Mi'kmaq are doing, are creating for DFO a bit of instability with those 150 traps. And that's bad for business. And so I think that that's also important for people to understand.
Trina, you have not joined us before, but what we do here is duly note things that could use a bit more attention and otherwise might go unnoted. I'm going to kick us off. I want to thank Kate Herman for bringing this to our attention. This is a section that ran in the Globe and Mail. If you're flipping through the Globe and Mail recently, you would have found amid coverage that's quite critical of Canada's really faltering relationship with China, which is in a really trepidatious place right now. But then there's a lot of happy news. China Watch, tree fellers turn into tree lovers. Live streams help produce a mushrooming industry. Foreign firms see rosy prospects for services trade, a chain of celestial lights to celebrate inclusiveness. China Watch is suddenly a fun thing to do. It's because China paid for China Watch and ran a bunch of upbeat stories about China to kind of just even out some of the more, you know, bummer, factual, newsworthy stuff that the Globe and Mail likes to publish. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about branded content a bit more later in today's episode, but, you know, there's a couple points to this. One is that, you know, Trina, you and I might see this and we might recognize that the fonts look different than the Globe and Mail's usual fonts, and it does say sponsored content on the page. And savvy newsreaders like you and I might know, okay, this is an ad. But I think the whole point here is that a lot of people don't know that. It looks like a bunch of articles in the Globe and Mail about China. It looks like a special section on China, and that's the point. And I do think that it does affect the Globe and Mail's ability to report on China with its own editorial voice when they take these checks and run this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is like how does that impact your editorial decisions for those harder news stories that maybe aren't as flattering that are up closer to the front page?
Let's say not at all. Let's say that those reporters are kept in a metal box where they didn't even know that the China Watch was going to be in the paper till it came out. Let's say that they were somehow kept from even knowing it once it came out, and that they're free to report on China as they would. I think that it still does affect the credibility that the reader places in the Globe's China coverage. You know what I mean? I don't think it's necessarily just about whether or not Nathan Vanderclip reporting out of China, I don't think he's corrupted by these ads, but I do think that when you're getting your China news from the Globe and Mail, it's more complicated when the Globe and Mail is also giving you Chinese state propaganda.
Yeah, well, and they are still distributing the propaganda.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so there's still, like, you might have the news story that, yes, the reporter was in a bubble and had nothing to do with the sponsored content. But then, yeah, you're right. Like, as the viewer flips through, it's still a message that you're allowing, whether it's sponsored content, whether it's clear or not that it's sponsored content, it's still in your paper. Like, yeah, I can't, now that I think about it, I can't imagine if you went on APTN National News on our website and then we had like a whole section that was sort of almost contrary to maybe some of our other reporting that was sponsored.
Yeah.
Duly noted.
Trina, what do you have for us?
You know, my colleague Angel Moore, who's a reporter for APTN National News in the Halifax region, just recently, she's covering the fishing story right now, but she just recently did a series of stories on racism in the RCMP. It's a story that I've covered in the past, and she kind of picked up that ball and kept pushing for answers. It's really important right now in light of, you know, demands for police accountability and defund the police and Black Lives Matter. So I think people should head to the, you know, APTN National News website and sort of find those stories that Angel Moore did on the RCMP and racism that's persistent.
Was there any like one big finding she had, or like a big outcome of that story?
She actually had like a Mi'kmaq officer who's retired now talking about his. So some of it is those kind of personal experiences. But I think the actual like story is that there hasn't been anything done, because they know racism exists, and it's the frustration that RCMP knows there's racism in the ranks, but yet doesn't seem to address it. And I mean, Lucky even considered the question of systemic racism and whether that existed in the RCMP. So I think the fact that her coverage sort of exposed that, like, really there was no change and the RCMP didn't have a good answer is very telling. It's almost more telling than if they had, you know, some sort of response.
Duly noted. You know what? I'm going to squeeze in one last one. I have to point this out. It's so rare now. There's just layoffs in newspapers, like, you know, it feels like every week for any reporting job to be posted, like somebody hiring feels really rare. And for the Globe and Mail to be putting out a call that they're like actually hiring a reporter, that is uncommon. And you can only imagine what the competition must be like for that job with all the reporting talent that you know is looking for work right now. I want to duly note that job, that Globe and Mail reporting job, went to Jaron Kerr. Jaron Kerr is a young journalist who I met when I was asked to come speak some years ago to University of Toronto. And he was a student journalist there, and that's where we met. And later he came to work for Canada Land as an intern. We hired him back as a reporter, later an editor. And of course, he's the guy who did this massive investigation of the We organization. He later left to go to Yahoo Finance, but then came back to file another story on some We real estate. And he's the one who got the job at the Globe and Mail. Jaron's accomplishments are his own. I just feel lucky to have had him on our team, and I think that it's the Globe who's lucky. And now that he's with the Globe, there's a good chance that his reporting is going to fall under the criticism and scrutiny of Shortcuts sooner or later. And I know that he won't take it personally when that happens. So I want to congratulate Jaron. And I also want to congratulate my colleague Andrea Schmidt, who just won a fucking news Emmy.
And the Emmy goes to El Chapo Sun, the weekly FX networks. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you. We weren't expecting this. This Emmy really belongs to the legendary Culiacan reporter Ernesto Martinez, who drove into a gunfight between the Sinaloa cartel and armed forces on October 17th, and he shot it all on his cell phone. We are so proud and so grateful to have worked with him on this film, and we dedicate this honor to him and to everyone in Sinaloa whose lives have been shattered by this drug war. Thank you so much.
Congratulations, Andrea Schmidt, and everybody at The Weekly. Really good work there.
Andrea Schmidt, our managing editor here, she used to work for the New York Times show The Weekly, and it just won the News Emmy for coverage of a breaking news story for news magazines. And that's for her report that she directed, El Chapo's Son, The Siege of Culiacan. So this is not even stuff that the wider public needs to know more about. This is just something that made my week brighter, both of these things. It's just like, I'll take good news wherever I can get it, Trina. It's in short supply these days.
Duly noted.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Trina, have you heard the new podcast, Go the Distance?
I have not. What is that about?
So this is something with the CBC logo on it. It's hosted by a CBC host, Leah Simone Bowen, host of The Wonderful Secret Life of Canada. And what can I tell you about Go the Distance? Go the Distance shares stories of students whose lives have been transformed by online education. That's very specific for a CBC show. It's branded content. It's branded content, or as they call it, sponsor content from Athabasca University, an online university. And this is the podcast from what we learned last week. Katie Jensen tweeted out, oh, have a look at this. CBC Tandem. They have a new wing of CBC. It is CBC's commercial production unit. That's how it's credited at the end of that podcast. And yeah, they're making branded podcasts. Sometimes I would say cynically, this is the CBC taking its credibility, which we all pay for. We all pay for CBC to be a credible news source with our tax money. And they're taking that credibility and they're trying to leverage it and sell it to their corporate clients. And I would sound very cynical if I said something like that, but I don't have to say that because the CBC said that. Donald Lizotte, the general manager and chief revenue officer of CBC, he said, clients wanted an integrated turnkey solution to create quality content and leverage the credibility of our network. I'm so pleased that we now offer this. Trina, what do you think?
I don't know. Like, if it's, or do listeners, or viewers, like, recognize that this is branded content, that it is, like, is it clear, like, to the viewer? Because I'm just looking at the CBC site now, and it says, craft it with expertise, authenticity, and relevance. Like, you wouldn't get the sense that this is, I mean, clearly there's a message. It seems, does it come across as news? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Well, I mean, this is the kind of tricky thing with branded content from the get-go. the whole reason why it exists is because it makes money, and it makes money, and you can charge a lot more for branded content than you would for an ad. I mean, you can go and buy an ad on CBC Podcasts, but if you want your own CBC branded podcast about your university or your company, like Gillette and Visa work with CBC on branded content. I don't know if they're going to be making podcasts. If you want the CBC brand, the reason why you want the CBC brand is because it does muddy and confuse the waters. And I note that these new branded CBC podcasts are going to be also condensed into, here's how they put it, incorporate your messaging into sponsored storytelling segments. They don't call it an ad. It's a sponsored storytelling segments featured as effective 1.5 minute spots within podcasts on CBC Listen. So the plan is to blend these things together. Like you'll be listening to As It Happens or whatever, and then there'll be 1.5 minutes of a branded podcast. And like, let's just be clear about this. The point is to blend this in and use very explicitly, it's to use whatever credibility they have. Because here's the problem with branded podcasts. Nobody listens to them. You can go and hire people to make really professional sounding podcasts, but then it's just another podcast among millions. And it's a podcast like branded shows. You know, there are dozens of different banks out there with shows about, you know, disruptive startups or how to maximize your potential. They're think tanks and policy groups that sort of sound like current affairs and news panel shows, but they never get too negative. And Trina, I think it's only fair here that I note my own terrible hypocrisy. Canada Land has made a branded podcast, but I think it's interesting to go back into our history here to talk about like the decision we had to make. We knew that we could make a good branded podcast. We knew that there was money to be made by making branded podcasts, and we also knew the big problem with branded podcasts, which is like, okay, let's say you've made one. How do you get anyone to listen to it? Like, I don't listen to branded podcasts. And here we are with a podcast network. We can introduce new shows and we have a brand that people trust. And so we thought we're in a good position to use the Canada Land brand to actually make branded podcasts people will listen to. And the best way to do that would be to kind of do what like everybody does, what the CBC just did, and create like, you know, a related imprint, you know, Canada Land Content Studios or, you know, Canada Land Digital or Canada Land Creative or, you know, something like that, that we know that it's a distinction, but nobody in the public would really know what the hell that means. It would just sound like a Canada Land thing. And the reason why we didn't do that is not because I am a noble man of virtue true who couldn't possibly lower myself. No, I like making money, but I knew that that would threaten our business because our business is about having a trusted news brand that we work really hard. I couldn't sell it to our supporters. We would lose supporters. We would lose credibility. We would lose listeners. And ultimately we'd lose advertisers if we did that. It's just like, I couldn't make it wash, but the CBC apparently could.
My thing is like, I think that like, it is like, we are like, you know, cause you just mentioned too, like the shout out to the person who got the job at the Globe and Mail, right? There's like a lot of cutbacks, like journalism and media, you know, finding a way to make money. So I get that, like, it's hard. Like APTN struggles with that for our website because, you know, our CRTC license doesn't give us money for that. So like, how do you pay for it, right? Like, how do you get the money for that?
if only the government gave you more than $1 billion a year like they do the CBC.
I know. So I get that. My thing, though, is like sometimes with podcasts, there's just so many. I'll go and I'll be like, I don't want to waste my time on something that I'm not sure that I'm interested in. And then, but are you taking up space with these things? Like, you know, like not you, sorry, just the brand, like these branded content podcasts. Are you just taking up space in the podcast world? And like you said, sort of muddying the waters. But then, I mean, like, it's like people have to make money. I just think that like, you're like, if people are coming to Canada Land for a certain perspective, yeah. Like, are you sort of, endangering that, if you have this branded content that's being produced, sort of off of your, you know, credibility. So are you hurting your credibility? I don't know. I don't know that I have an answer. I have a lot of questions.
I think it's pretty clear. And, you know, again, it's not like a moral high ground. Like the Toronto Star has a sponsored content wing, the Globe and Mail, everybody, like it's times are tough. Go make your money. Anybody in commercial media, if they got to go do this, it's their brand is theirs to leverage if that's what they want to do. But my complaint about this is that it's the CBC. So there's two things. First of all, it's a taxpayer funded competitor in a business that I'm in and that other, like, what do we need? Like in the branded podcast business, I should be competing with a taxpayer underwritten Like, there's no argument for that. And but then I think it's of wider relevance that, like, when the CBC leverages its news credibility to make branded podcasts for corporate clients, they're not leveraging an asset that belongs to them. We need the CBC to be a credible news source. There's no guarantee that any big news service is going to even be here in 5 or 10 years. And the CBC is in a unique position of having all, like, more money than it's ever gotten from the government at a time when we need news reporting. And their credibility is under attack every day. And they keep doing dumbass things like putting Rosie Barton's name on a lawsuit against the Conservative Party. So when they do this, it's not just their CBC News logo, the CBC brand, and it's theirs to, like, really, like, diminish if they choose to. Like, everybody in Canada needs that. We would all be better off if the CBC were a more respected and trusted news source. So they're selling things that don't belong to them, and that bugs me.
Well, it is true. I mean, and CBC, I mean, obviously for APTN, CBC Indigenous, I mean, they're mainly an online platform, and we are, APTN is TV. But we don't sort of get that funding. And you're right. Like, we aren't government funded. Sometimes I think people think APTN is government funded. No, we're not. we're not government funded. And so, if APTN could do it, maybe there'd be a way. I'm just wondering, like, so for APTN, I'll just, like, from my perspective, how would that work if we have sort of a brand of content maybe from some sort of Indigenous organization that wants to, like, piggyback off the APTN brand, but then all of a sudden, like, we have to turn around and do, like, a negative story on...
That's an issue, too. What if Athabasca University has some terrible scandal? Like, you know,
yeah.
Well... Listen, you know, I get back channel communication from people at CBC, and I can tell you there's some marquee hosts at the CBC who are furious about this. And they found out from me that these branded shows are going to be slotted in as ads on their podcasts. They didn't even know that. So I'm curious if the journalists at the CBC who rely on that credibility, if they're going to flex a little power, which I think they have to flex, and if this branded podcast thing is going to keep going or not. We can debate the degree to which it compromises the CBC brand, but, like, it doesn't help. It's not a good thing if you're trying to establish news legitimacy.
Well, and I think that because even if you're able to within your organization, and maybe CBC is able to do this, I mean, certainly APTN has a board of directors and they have no say in our coverage for news, right? I mean, that's, you're able to be separate and independent in our coverage. But I think it's also sometimes it's the perception that matters, right? So the perception from the viewership, if it causes a little bit of, lack of trust. Like, even if it's not the case, even if they're able to maintain sort of editorial control over their stories, regardless of this branded content, ad that just ran in the podcast 2 seconds before, I think maybe it's just the perception of for the listener or the viewer, right?
Trina, we work in media. It's the perception business. It's the trust and perception business. That's all we got.
You are right.
That is Canada Land Shortcuts for today. Trina, thank you so much for joining me for it.
Thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
I can be emailed to jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything that people send. We're on Twitter @CanadaLand. Trina, where can people find you and your work?
I'm at Twitter, just @TrinaRoach, and they can find me if you look on APTN Investigates website. You can click on my stories and my email is there.
Our website is CanadaLandShow.com, where you'll find a new episode of our podcast about Doug Ford, Wag the Doug. It's all about how Doug Ford shipped wolves to Michigan. Well, it's not all about that, but that's in there. This episode is produced by Tiffany Lamb. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount.
The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.